boys are coming out.
Good evening, everyone. So I have 6 o'clock straight up, and I'm going to call this City Council study session to order. Today is September 7th. It is 6 p.m. Hello, Chuck. Will everybody stand with me to say the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, I am going to do roll call. I'll begin with you, Councilman Owen.
Present.
Councilwoman McGoffin.
Present.
Councilwoman Diamond.
Present.
Councilman Burns.
Present.
Councilwoman Kesty.
Present.
Councilman Allen.
Present.
And Councilman Lavaca, I see you are online with us tonight. Welcome.
Present. Thank you.
Before we move into the presentation, I just wanted to make everybody aware of what I have said at your desk. It's September 22nd, Hunger Action Month. On the 28th, Helping Hands Food Bank will be here to talk about hunger awareness. But we received these at a Rotary meeting, and I thought maybe, perhaps, because we won't see them till the end of the month, and they'll probably hand these out, that you may be interested in participating. So I brought it with. If you'd like to participate, you have that option. All right, we're going to move right into the first item on our agenda tonight, and that is the Justice System Interlocal Agreements with Skagit County for Community Court and Probation Renewal. And I would like to introduce Judge Jennifer Housen. Greetings, and thank you for coming here tonight.
Mayor Johnson, thank you. Council members, I see a lot of new faces, so it's very nice. Thank you for having us here from Community Court. I am the District and Municipal Court presiding judge, which is all the other municipal courts in the county plus the district court. And I used to practice here for many decades, about 30 years, and also was a pro tem judge here in Cedro Woolley. So the history and the culture, if you will, of Cedro Woolley is really important to me. And I've been thrilled to be able to supervise and lead the team in the development of a community court in Cedro Woolley Municipal Court. And for those of you who may or may not know, community court is a diversion court from traditional court processes. So court has not changed in our county in maybe 200 years in the way it has. It's been always been an adversarial system, and a person is punished and goes to jail and pays a fine. And then what I was seeing when I got on the bench is there was a lot of repeat offenders, and the door seemed to just cycle, and none of the underlying causes of the criminal behavior was being addressed. And so I started, within weeks, started reaching out to find out what could be a solution. And I found two community courts in Spokane and in Olympia, and then I found several others across the nation. And I followed the model, and I went and found financing, and you're going to hear a lot more about that financing and the funding that we got, but we got federal funding, state funding. I've been going to the legislature for grants, and I've been talking to cities about supporting the community court model. What we do is we find out what the cause of the behavior is at the very first meeting when they come to court. We find out if it's treatment, mental health counseling. We have the providers right here in the room, and they are directed in a warm handoff to those services. We ensure that with advocates, that their needs, their basic needs are being met, housing when we can, shelter, food, jobs, and so forth. So, and then if they're successful, then we are able to dismiss the charges. And we also offer other services like getting licenses reinstated and helping them be able to be in a position to have job skills and interview skills and getting on housing lists where they have trouble in the past. So, because of their history, they may not qualify. So before I turn it over to our administrator, I just want to read one letter that I received today. If I can do it and still speak, because it's really, really powerful when you're in the courtroom. And this is from a gentleman in Mount Vernon Municipal, because I have one graduate to tell you about, Cedro Woolley. But this is his letter to the court upon graduation. Life in December of 2019, back when I had gotten these charges, was miserable. I was at my lowest point with regards to my drug addiction and poor mental health. It made me feel like someone I'm not. I strongly regret the decisions I made while I was on drugs. Since I've been clean, I've been able to hold a steady job at Penn Cove Shellfish. Working at Penn Cove has helped me become more confident in who I am and has made me feel like I have a purpose. I've been able to start renting a place for my girlfriend, our daughter, who we will be welcoming in October, and myself. I could never have imagined my life being so good. The life I live now compared to the life I used to live is super rewarding. I'm so proud of the man I've become and never want to jeopardize my life I live now. Thank you for the opportunity to share. And that's what he read to the court upon his graduation. And I'm just going to flash it because it's not appropriate to show you. But this was his criminal history before, and there's been none since. And so those are the kinds of success stories we're having and the difference that we're making. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Letty Nunez, who is our community court coordinator. And then she'll have some information for you, and you can ask us both any questions you might have.
Hi, good evening. I'm Letty Nunez. I'm the community court coordinator here with Skagit County. Prior to taking this position, I worked 8 years with the Skagit County District Court Probation Department. Started out as a receptionist and then moved my way up to programs supervisor there. And so what I have here is we have a little bit of information, some stats that we have that I'd like to hand out for you guys to review. And then if you have any questions for us, we are here to answer. So is it okay to approach?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Would you like to say?
No.
Okay.
Moving up.
So as Judge Housen mentioned, community court, we begin in 2020. I began in the position in January of 2021. Since then, I feel that we have made very large strides in our program, even during the pandemic. I know Judge Housen doesn't like to use the pandemic as an excuse because we just obviously pushed forward, beginning with district court, community court, and then it was followed by Anacortes Municipal, and then everybody just kind of joined in, and we came in swinging. Cedro Woolley Municipal Court joined community court. We began at the beginning of 2021. There's a little bit of difficulties as far as getting people referred, qualified, and I think Judge Stiles wanted to speak a little bit of that. But if you see that in 2022, and I'm referring to this document here, we have since entered 15 new candidates into our program, all receiving and actively participating in meaningful programming. We are, it looks like, as far as that, they are a little bit ahead, kind of tied in with the other municipal courts here this year alone. But our program is currently funded by state and federal. We were able to acquire a 2-year federal grant, and that was with $399,000. We recently received the news that we are able to extend that funding for another year, so we are funded through the grant, the federal grant, until September 30th of 2023. Since then, as Judge Housen mentioned, she has been able to acquire additional state grants, and that will get us 3 additional community court case advocates who are here to advocate for our participants and screen them. And with those 3 additional advocates, we were able to make our current advocate, Ms. Kesterson, who is present in Cedar Woolley Municipal Court during community court hours, we were able to make her full-time. Since this point, it has been myself and Ms. Kesterson, mainly Ms. Kesterson, who's been present in all of the courts, supervising all of these participants that you see here. So it's a very big blessing to have an additional 3. So probably by October 15th, we will have everybody on board hired. And with that, we will able to assign a community court case advocate to each individual community court. Here, we'll have one assigned here. We'll have one in Anacortes, Mount Vernon, in district court. Some will carry 2, and we will also have a case advocate dedicated and assigned to the in-custody hearings. So we will be able to catch those individuals who are in great need and be able to screen them on site and direct them to the services that they need. With that, are there any questions? Or, Your Honor, Style, would you... Is there anything you would like to add?
Sure. You pretty much understand the kind of the concept of community court as far as the people that could actually qualify for it. So this is typically for people that have maybe a theft, maybe a driving license suspended 3rd. It's usually the low level misdemeanor type cases. So anything dealing with violence, anything dealing with driving under the influence, those type of things, they are not even eligible for this type of a program. So it's really, and from what I see, is you'll see somebody that has a record of, they'll have like 7 or 8 driving with license suspended 3rd cases, right? And sometimes it's very easy to get your license back as long as they know a track on how to get there. And so we're finding out with those cases is that the community court is going to be able to help these folks be able to figure out how to get through the system, get their license back, because there's usually some requirements that they have to do to be able to do it, and sometimes it's very difficult just to do it on your own. And we've all kind of been through the Department of Licensing and all that process too, but so that's just one example. Another example of why community court I think is going to work out really well is historically Cedar Woolley kind of had their own community court between the prosecutor and the public defender, and the way they dealt with it is they would agree that if this person did these type of things, maybe, get their driver's license back or go to counseling or do something like that, is that it will continue the case for 6 months, and if they don't have any new criminal offenses in that period of time, the case would get dismissed or reduced or something like that. So that was all done between the prosecutor and the public defender. Now the community court people will actually be doing all those things, so it'll actually free up some time for the public defender and the prosecutor to be able to do other cases rather than spending the same amount of time on these kind of low-level type of offenses. So, and I did want to explain, we didn't start here in Cedar Woolley until I think March of 2021, and so part of that issue why some people were referred there, some elected not to participate, some didn't qualify. But if you remember in 2021, our court went through quite a bit of change in the fact of Heidi getting sick and having a new clerk being put in. Then we had a brand new prosecutor and a brand new public defender all start at the beginning of the year too. So, and that's why you see the numbers go from basically 0 up to 15 now, and we're ahead of Mount Vernon and ahead of Burlington and almost tied with Burlington with the number of cases currently in the community court. So again, low-level offenses, it actually frees up time of moving this over to community court to have the people actually do the various things that they have to do. And hopefully, you know, again, if the person gets their driver's license back and they're doing nothing but getting pulled over for these type of cases, frees up the police officers from having to do that and actually then go through the court system. So any questions for any of us?
Can I call you Ross?
You called me that for 60 years, so
for
you could do that.
65 years, yeah. I think I'm saying recidivation. Yeah. How often does that occur?
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd be surprised. Judge Housen held up a person's, you know, criminal history. I mean, you sometimes pull that up when a person's here, and it goes on for a couple of pages sometimes, so that's a real problem. And sometimes it's these low-level offenses that a person keeps doing as well, the driving without a license, you know, a theft, those type of cases that we want to try to deal with that, get them the help that they need that they're obviously not getting because they're just repeating over and over again,
right,
to try to get them out of the system altogether.
Okay, if they don't agree with your terms for community court, then they go back to civil court then type
well,
thing.
Well, back to the regular court calendar. So that's the requirement that they have to do, is that they have to stipulate that they're going to do these things, and if they don't do it, then actually the court can actually just find them guilty on the underlying charge and sentence them to whatever needs to get done at that point. So there's an incentive that they can get a dismissal out of this by basically doing the things to get them on the right track. So
I think the beauty of this, too, is that you have those agencies right here on site, correct? They are here. So where before our defense attorney and prosecuting attorney, they left it up to the client to get the help. But with community court, you have those agencies here so they can step into that process immediately. Is that correct?
Correct. And so that's why we call it community court also, because we're working with the community providers, mm-hmm. and we're trying to support the businesses here as well by help people that are charged with trespass and people that are living on the streets. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, we expect to have a person with a counseling degree that is assigned to this particular court. But we also work hand-in-hand on almost a daily basis with Helping Hands and some of the other agencies. We use United Northwest Treatment Agency and Sunrise Services for the mental health providing. So we do make connections right here in the courtroom for all of those services.
Okay. You know, criminal trespass is another one of those that we see a repeat of sometimes the same person over and over again. And I believe one of the graduations that we had just had a couple of weeks ago actually was able to get housing. Out
yes, of that's correct.
Deal. So that was a big plus.
Wow, that's
huge. She's in school, she got housing, and she got a job.
Oh, wow.
And she's the graduate, and she has not reoffended. And she's just graduated, but we're really excited for that. That's a person whose life has changed.
It almost sounds like it's a safety net. I mean, that's kind of what I hear you saying, is that it keeps them, it's a safety net. It provides those things that provide their basic needs so that they can focus on the help that they need.
And it creates a network for them of support so that they mm-hmm. have people in the community that they can go to when times are difficult. And that's what the national model is that we follow. This is all evidence-based practices that we have adopted from the courts across the country, and that's because that's what works, is that they have a support system.
And when I spoke to you this morning, Judge Housen, you made mention that there's a couple programs here in the state of Washington that are highly successful, one in Spokane.
Correct.
Can you speak to that briefly?
I can't remember the exact year, but it's probably been 7 to 10 years for Olympia and for Spokane. And so when we were originally looking at statistics, we went to those programs. But they hold their community court in a library, and they have completely changed how downtown looks there in Spokane, because the people that are participants clean up the building around, and they go out and approach people that write on the walls and say, hey, this is our community court building, and what, you know, don't write on it and don't drop your litter. But their statistics are really good examples of how the program works. I can just tell you anecdotally that sitting there as a judge every morning in the jail, which I did for the first 3 years of my tenure, I was seeing the same faces over mm-hmm. and over and over on all of the low-level things, and you can't really keep them in the jail because the jail needs to be for the people like the DUIs and the serious
violent
assaults.
Offenders.
Yes. So,
and another point, though, is the people that go into this, I mean, there's things that they have to do, so it's not just we're going to help you do this. there's a lot of times community service involved in this. Yes. There's other things that they have to do to kind of help themselves as well. So,
yeah. And even though they've graduated from the program, we continue to offer them services. We continue to keep our door open to them in case they do face another hurdle in life. They have somebody to come to, and we are more than welcome to, again, help them out and refer them to services, even though they don't have any new charges. They just want to be, like you indicated, Mayor Johnson, a safety net for them to be able to catch them before they start to reoffend.
And we could talk for hours, but we won't do that. But just,
we have a
resource
question.
Center, too, where they can come in Mount Vernon. We have a beautiful building. That.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So Councilman McGoffin has a question.
Okay, thank you. I just appreciate, you know, what you guys are doing. I think it's really making a good impact on the community. I had one question on the stats on the staff accomplishments page. The clients self-showing to the court building without an appointment, are those people that are hearing about the program and coming to like, clear their record by doing and getting into these services, or are those like referrals from nonprofits to you
guys? It might just be, so it is the Resource Center. Well, I don't know, it's probably not called the Resource Center, but it's at the Parker Building. It's on College Way. It's where the District and Municipal Court Probation Office is. So we have a community court building, and that's where this team, which will be all the advocates are. So the answer to your question is it's all the different ways. So law enforcement tells them if you need a tent, because we have some of our grant money is going to food and shelter. We have closets full of tents and food items, sanitary items, all those things that people need, but also someone to talk to. So with this new grant from the state, we're going to have somebody be able to be in that building to talk to the people and de-escalate them, and that's helping the impact on first responders and law enforcement. They were coming to the lobby on a regular basis, so we have people trained to de-escalate, and so it's they come from lawyers tell them about it, they hear it from other people, or they're I'm not sure where they all hear about it, but we keep statistics on how many people show up.
Okay, great. Sorry. Last question. I noticed a lot of the funding is through grants. What is the game plan if in the future we're unable to secure those?
That's a great question, and I work very, very hard at those. It takes up a big chunk of my time, which is not good for, you know, I could be doing a lot of other things. And same for Ms. Nunez. So we would like to ultimately be funded perpetually in some manner from the cities, the county, and the 0.1% or other manners like that. So Olympia Court has funded, they're funded by a city levy maybe or something dedicated specifically to this. So it's like a 0.1%, but it includes their court. So they're perpetually funded that way. But then they also get federal grants to support that. So I would honestly like to not have to go seek funding all the time. But I do know from I've been to the legislator. I'm the chair of the Therapeutic Courts Committee for the state for the district and municipal court judges. And so we are already applying for to see if the state wants to do some perpetual funding, and they are expressing interest at this time. But as you can imagine, things change all the time, and Olivia, so that makes us a little nervous as well. So I know we have excellent support from the county commissioners, and so far all the city mayors and all of the city councils have been supportive. And a little tiny detail about your court, we had originally only charged the city for one court date a month, but we quickly saw that if we were there every time court was held, we could make a bigger impact. So we just came on the second day. And so that's, if you see an increase, that's why, because now we're billing for both those days. But we're making a much bigger impact. When you have a dedicated provider, I'm really excited to see what can happen.
That's great for the whole community. Not just Cedar Willy, but the whole community. Yeah,
that advocate can go out and speak to the community.
So if I can ask, your request then for the community court renewal would be for Cedar Willy $7,321 roughly.
That's correct.
Yes.
So this is just a discussion tonight. We're going to bring this back to you, I believe, on the 14th. Is that correct?
Either on the 14th or on the 28th. The 14th has to turn around very quickly, but I'll do my best.
And if there are further questions, are they free to contact you? Would you prefer that they use a different path? Or
No, and contact Ms. Nunez. I don't know if you have any of your cards with you.
I believe the pamphlet has my email and the phone number on there.
It does.
Yep. Okay. Absolutely.
Great.
And you're also welcome to contact me at the district court as well.
Okay. Thank you.
And you can come to court on the first Thursday or the third Thursday at around 2 o'clock is when we actually have, and I think we might have a graduation scheduled for tomorrow, maybe.
Yeah, anyone's
looking. Oh, my gosh. Well, that's awesome. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here tonight.
Mayor Johnson, if I could just chime in a little bit. There's a second interlocal agreement regarding probation as well that is up for renewal, and it was also included in this cover memo, and I just wanted to make sure if the council had any questions related to probation.
Oh, I see.
We got those answered this evening as well.
If you do, I won't be able to answer them. No, just kidding.
But that will also be back on either the 14th or the 20th.
Yeah, what you'll see when these come back is they'll be split. They're two separate action items, but for the purposes of tonight, we have the experts here. We put them together.
If you'd like, in all seriousness, I can address a little bit of that, and that is that do you want me to? The rates are increasing for probation. We haven't raised the rates since, I don't know.
I think it's been a long time.
Like, feel 15 years or something.
I think it was like 15 years, but one of the 50? Administrators.
50, I mean, a long time. So the rates have not gone up. They're $50 now, and they're going up to $100. We were the lowest in the entire state. We also were one of the probation departments that provide the greatest service. So we have all kinds of programming, which we do in that Parker building on College Way. So we do our own classes, our own anger management, our own MRT programming. So they're getting a lot more for their fees and a lot more supervision. And it's, again, they're adopting that model instead of punishment that gets you no results to figure out what the cause of the problem is when they're still being supervised by probation officers. So we would welcome to show you how probation is working as well.
And the rate that is increasing is actually the rate that's being charged to the participant themselves. So it's not so much directly to the court. It's their monthly fee as far as the $50 a month will be then increased to $100 a month, which is always, they're always able to speak to the probation officer to be able to apply to either reduce that fee or waive the fee based off of their financial situation at that moment.
All right. Thank you. Any questions regarding that? Thank you again.
And there's also an RCW, which is a law that codifies what we're talking about and the rates, and so that's been provided to the city. So there's a legal basis for all of it as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Second item on our agenda tonight is cross-training, and I'm going to turn this over to our finance director, Kelly Kokum.
Good evening. So first, just wanted to talk about some of the challenges the finance department has faced in the past and currently still faces. The first one is lack of backup for some of our crucial functions. So right now, we have no payroll backup, accounts payable, EMS billing, which is something that we may never truly have a good backup for. It's so specialized, and as well as not a lot of cross training on records retention. So this lack of backup, especially for payroll, has led to a couple of unfortunate incidences. First one, being that when our payroll clerk was out on leave she had to do payroll from her car in the alley right over here, it's just not something we want our employees to have to do, is to work while they're on their leave. Our AP clerk, like I said, there's no backup for AP right now. We're working on that currently with our part-time staff person who covers lunches for us. But that's a little slow moving because they get frequent interruptions as that's during the lunch hours. This week, we are also interviewing for the EMS billing position. Our EMS biller is retiring at the end of the year. She has some really big shoes to fill for whoever takes over that position. but they also do a lot of backup for finance. About a third of their job is dedicated to finance backup, helping with the daily bank reconciliations, greeting customers at the counter, answering phone calls, those sorts of things. She'll be training a new person for approximately 3 months. EMS billing is a fairly technical position. So that'll be her number one priority. So the finance work will take a little bit of a back seat to that. Another challenge we're facing in the finance department is continuing to digitize our records, really for two purposes: to make it easy for city staff to find the records they need. You know, if you need to find a interlocal agreement or a contract, sometimes it can be a little take a little bit of labor to get that done. So we're working to digitize that, but it is a tedious task. So I've been here about 3.5 months, and just from my observations in the department and working in it, most of the staff are pretty at capacity or are very nearing capacity for the amount of work that they can accomplish in any given day. Not a lot of time to set aside to train their fellow staff members on their main functions. And not a lot of time to put together a kind of manual of the main functions they do. So if they're out, people can refer back to the experts' notes on how to get a task done. Or have time to make their jobs more efficient. It always takes time up front to make these jobs efficient. The majority of staff have been in their positions for less than 2 years, so really still working on that. And one way that we've come up with to help, you know, it won't solve all the problems, but to really help with these challenges the finance department is facing is to be closed on half days on Fridays. You know, initial discussions with senior management team were very supportive. We brought back that to the finance department, and they felt really heard and supported by city management. And I think it would go a long way to feel that support as well from the council. The public sees the police department and the fire department, all the great work they do, as well as, you know, our parks and our, you know, everyone can drive on our streets well. We have a great streets department, but finance helps support those departments. Without finance, none of those people could get paid or the bills out the door. So it is providing a crucial function, and we want to retain those staff. We had a lot of turnover in the last 2 years, and providing a space where staff can do their jobs well and not feel that they can't step away from their job and have it be complete. You know, if the AP clerk goes on vacation, AP is not getting paid that week. Those bills are going to be held. So those are some of the issues that are coming up in finance. I know I said that all, you know, all at once, one big blur, but wanted to put that out to council. And if you had any questions for me or Charlie.
Yeah, go ahead. Councilman Kesty.
Thank you. I appreciate all the work that everyone does in that department. I would be opposed to closing half day because it's hard for me to see that the women before were able to do it and do it well. And as a taxpayer, they need to be able to come in at the hours Monday through Friday. So I would be opposed to that.
Yeah, there's definitely a cost to that happening. The women who were there before had you know, years or decades of experience in their roles. And like I said, almost everyone has will have been there for less than 2 years. And when Carol retires, all but one person will have been there. So we can't live up to somebody with that level of experience without dedicating the significant time. Additionally, you know, the city is continuing to grow. One thing that's starting at the beginning of 2023 is we'll be taking on all the payroll for our volunteer firefighters who were formerly all their payroll. We paid them, but it all went through the Volunteer Firefighters Association. That's 39 additional payroll every month, additional load on our payroll staff, which just continues the need. So I do recognize that there is a cost, but I believe the cost outweighs, or the benefit outweighs the cost, excuse me.
Councilman Diamond?
Excuse me, Kelly.
One moment, Councilman Diamond has a question.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'll get to you, Glenn. Okay.
I would have to suggest that maybe we look into getting additional staff there to help people rather than closing the doors half day on a Friday, because to me, I don't feel like that solves any issue. There's still no backup for payroll. There's still no backup for finance. There's still no backups in everything that we're claiming. Also claiming that we are growing, and if we are growing, we need to be open and available for those community members that are paying their taxes to be able to come in and obtain the services that the city provides. Excuse me. So I would have to agree with Councilwoman Cassidy in that I don't agree with half days on Fridays as a whole as closing. Closing the city offices in that, I don't think that's going to solve the problems. I think we would just need to look at where we can cut or adjust or move budget in order to find a support staff that would be capable of actually helping and picking up the slack there and providing that backup, somebody that can do that additional payroll or step in the times when you guys need that additional help, because you all do work very hard. I've walked in there on several occasions and not been greeted by anybody. And that's not the way it used to be. And I completely understand that things have changed because everybody's got different workloads and these people came from different places. But at the same point, we can't let our customer service fall down because of that as well. As a city, we've taken pride in being the people that our community wants to talk to, and having our doors open and being transparent in that. And I think that closing the doors would create an issue in that. And again, I don't think it's going to solve the problem. But I would say that we would need to look more towards budget issues and trying to find an actual support staff suitable for fitting in the office there.
Just testing the water.
Councilman Allen.
Okay, just really quick, Kelly. I'm kind of with the two. I think closing the doors on the public is a slap in the face to the taxpayers. And you mentioned that, you've only got 2 years experience on some ladies, and the old gals, the old employees worked for years or decades. Well, they all started out with 1 or 2 years. So, if we make the job pleasant enough, maybe they'll stick around for a couple decades. You never know. But I don't think the citizens should be punished and shut out of City Hall for a half of a day a week. That's my opinion.
Can I ask how many people come in on Fridays? Did you do a survey at all?
We did a quick analysis of just in the last eight weeks. I forgot to bring those numbers today, but they are less than the majority of other days. Thursdays are generally our busiest days, and Fridays are less busy. It's hard to get a good number on it because it's hard to tally. We did just cash receipts on those Fridays, but it's not just cash receipts. It's staff or it's people walking in the door, phone calls. But we believe that having a half day does help with the problem. Part of it is staff don't have our two main front staff take the vast majority of the phone calls, and people walk in the door with a lot of support from the other finance staff. And with the amount of interruptions they receive, it's hard to get in a flow to teach someone. To teach someone well, you need to start a thought from start to finish. And that's difficult with the phone ringing or someone coming in or, other staff come in to get stuff in their mailboxes. So we think half days will benefit our department. We could always use an extra person, but I think every department could use an extra, extra person. And I believe previously the council has, had the target of working with the staff that we have. So we're open to additional ideas of more staff. But it's not quite a solution for our immediate need.
Because they would still have to be trained.
They would still have to be trained.
Okay. Yes, Councilman Burns?
Madam Mayor.
One moment, Councilman Lavaca, I'll get to you.
So I can understand how tough it is to train somebody when you're getting interrupted. I've had a job where that is literally what was expected of me, and it was deeply difficult to get somebody prepped to where they could actually do my job. And so I hear you. I'm not necessarily opposed to closing on an afternoon. I think Friday may or may not be the right choice. I'd kind of want to survey the whole week, but it sounds like there's a number of people here opposed to helping you on that front. So my curiosity would be, is there any way to close the department off to the public and just have someone who watches the counter, maybe not even from your department, or if we brought on extra staff, part-time person, something of that nature, so you'd still be able to do that? Because I'm sure that once you start delving into numbers and trying to get into a process, it's very difficult to answer three phone calls along the way and still get the person to understand what's going on.
Unfortunately, I don't believe that would work, because people are coming. Our department is right at the front door. Everyone comes to that department, and I think it would be difficult for our staff to ignore somebody coming to the counter. You know, they would feel the need to get up and help them if they're standing in the lobby. Mm-hmm. I think people wouldn't know where to go. Almost everybody comes to us immediately upon entering. And most people that come in on those days are there to go to finance to, pay a bill or ask a question or something of that nature.
Gotcha. And that was more to my reference, having the part-time employee standing at that counter and just trying to get them to get the other people left alone. Hey, can I take a message for them? They're doing a training session right now.
Yeah.
Blinds in front of the windows.
Yeah.
Something so that the community can still come in and at least contact the city at that point.
Yeah. Thank you.
Councilman Lavaca.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I'm not sure if the little hand thing works on the screen. I'll go ahead and lower that. I was going to suggest what Joe Burns suggested. I think that I didn't understand at first. It sounded like closing down for a half a day and going home. But I think that might lead into just closing on Fridays or half days on Fridays altogether if they see that, we kind of get in that routine. Would we be able to just get somebody from Express for a 3-month period to scan documents, as you said that we need to do, to digitalize them, and many at the front window. While the finance department has one dedicated person that can bounce and help out if needed, but then the rest of them are cross-training. Because I know that accounts payable, accounts receivable, payroll, all of that, it does take time. You know, my wife, she does accounting, obviously. She does accounts receivable, but she cross-trained in everything and went to school for all of it. So it does take time, and I do get that. But it seems like there would be a way to partition. I mean, just put up partitions for the back so that people aren't distracted by the people coming in and feeling obligated to get up, but that person's scanning documents at the same time, killing two birds with one stone.
Frequently, you know, well, I guess not frequently on Fridays, but it's difficult to just have one person dedicated to standing at the front counter, because while there's no customers coming in, they begin work on another task. So if they're in the middle of something, somebody else might handle the front counter or phone calls during that time.
But aren't you, you've set your staff on a goal, you guys are cross training, do not answer the window, and you got a partition up and you have somebody just scanning documents and putting them into folder land so they can easily stop that for a second and go and help at the window. Is that not a possibility? Because it sounds like the majority is not in favor of closing down for a half day. So are you up to other options as far as, like, you know, working with your staff to be able to suggest or ask them just to let this person that's brought in for this short period handle the front desk and you guys focus in on the training portion?
Yeah, I still want to convince you. So I don't want to give up on that idea, that it's a really viable solution. I do want to clarify, if we were closed on half day on Fridays, our staff would still be there working. You know, one idea I had for cross training is we get a lot of calls about utility billing. Our utility billing clerk rarely leaves her office. She has a load, and she's taking phone calls all day, emails all day. We often take calls and try our best to answer them. But again, with the cross training, it's difficult with the number of calls we get for utility billing. You know, if we didn't have customers coming in on those days or answering phones on those days, half days, we could do trainings for the whole department. You know, our utility billing clerk could put together something to say, here are our frequently asked questions. Here's how to get the information that the customer is asking easily from the reports. I know I've answered the phone a couple of times myself and had to forward it on. Even some of the easier questions, our specialized staff have to answer them. So having some time to our staff to just teach general topics, not even necessarily cross-training, but general topics that we think we could serve our citizens better if they call into finance department and almost anyone can answer their question, that benefit outweighs the not being able to come into to City Hall Friday afternoon.
May I ask one more question, Kelly? What happened? Because all the staff's pretty much new in the last 2 years, and even you came in new, and I know that you had time with Debbie. How did that training work out? Were you guys, I mean, everybody got trained into their position. We didn't close half days, so you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it just because somebody else was there? And
I wasn't there, like I said, 3 months. I've been here 3 months, but from my conversations, it was a struggle. We don't want to relive that struggle. I think if we go through that again will have high levels of turnover before we have the opportunity to cross-train staff. I feel like everybody right now is feeling good about their jobs, hoping that these opportunities will come up so they can better their jobs and the work they do for the city. But if we keep the status quo, people will start to feel that again, especially in a very competitive labor market. And any of my staff who's listening, don't leave us.
Councilman McGoffin, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Kelly. I just had a couple of questions I was hoping to talk about. First off, feel the frustration. I know in my job I get called all the time too, and it's hard to stay focused on your task at hand. But I'm just going to be honest with you. Closing on Friday afternoons is a really hard sell for me too. And let me explain why. Because if we were a private company and we were providing, a product or something that we could, push hard 4 days and then on that Friday, not have to do something on the afternoon for the public, that would be more acceptable than closing our doors to our customers, to our taxpayers, because we're providing that public service. And I think that's part of our job is to be open Monday through Friday during normal business hours. Just in the nature of business that we're in, we are providing a service to the public. I think the public deserves to have it be available on Friday afternoon. So that being said, it's going to be really hard to convince me to change, to take that from the public because we're having staffing issues. I think what everyone else has said is, let's focus on what can we do for the staff to make that Friday afternoon more bearable and in general, the job more bearable, So I have a couple ideas and again, these are just proposals. First one is we've already had issues with the automated telephone answering service and there's been some talks of why don't we have, a human that's saying, welcome to CJ Woolley, how can I help you? And I know everybody's new, so it'd be hard to do this at first, but how many of these calls that are interrupting you guys could be automated through a person where like somebody says, I need help with this billing, I have a billing question, and they can type it up real quick, and it's in a wiki, and they have an answer that someone from your staff has already written up a good response, and that person on the phone, the receptionist can just say, here's your answer, and boom, that finance person doesn't get interrupted because the front desk answered that call. The second part is, you mentioned that there's times that nobody's calling or is at the desk. Could that person start learning the jobs of one or two people, like payroll, so that on a week that that person's out, the front desk can also cover because they've been cross-trained? I think that would be one solution that would also solve the problems we're having with the automated telephone. And I personally think if someone was to come in and they have one spot to go, and that person can direct them to, oh, you have an engineering question, that go to permits, or you have a finance, go here. I think that would provide a really nice service for people, and it would help out not just with your department, but all the departments that get phone calls directly to them, instead of having somebody answer the really easy questions up front and leave those hard questions for, like, okay, let me transfer you if they're available. Is that something you'd be open to?
Yes, that would require additional staff, that solution. Having someone dedicated to answering every phone call would also, require that additional staff time. And we are working on the phone tree. We've as a department have called the phone tree during office hours and after office hours to and we're going to make suggestions to make it better, so we're always working on that, but those solutions do require additional staff. The other issue is that person needs to go on vacation as well, so or is out sick or on lunch. And so other finance department staff, will inevitably answer phone calls. calls and all that. But having an additional full-time person in finance would benefit our department. To save costs, our solution was to have an alternative method of cross-training. But, you know, we're open to additional staff with consideration to the budget allowing for it.
And you would still need to train them.
And we would still need to train them. And just to give you some perspective, training staff is challenging, and it takes several cycles to train someone. Our payroll clerk, is busy all the time, so it takes quite a while for her to be able to. I think I'm going to be the payroll backup. It'll take me a couple months to get the necessary backup. So, I think Councilman LaVaca mentioned, 3 months. We anticipate the need to be longer than that, it takes a long time to train staff, especially new staff, and bringing on the new EMS billing clerk. Our current billing clerk does a lot for us finance-wise, so training someone up on all that. So really cross-training would be our priority for 6 to 12 months, honestly. And then after that, one thing we haven't brought up yet, or only briefly, is that organizing our public records, and that's a very long task, and we could dedicate some of that time after meeting our first priority to doing that. There is some legal and financial risk to not having that well done. And other cities have experienced that financial risk as well. So that's another thing that's always, always on our minds as well. And I just want to emphasize again that we know that there's a cost, but that we believe the increase in our the finance staff knowledge will outweigh that. The benefit that each person have a better understanding of the whole finance department duties will provide a better service to our citizens as a whole.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to respectfully request, if there's no more council input, because we're not going to vote on it tonight, so we're flogging it now.
I don't want to flog it anymore. I just had one last question, so promise. You mentioned this went to the senior management. Can you share some of their comments? Because I think this has come up before and we turned it down, but I'd like to know what senior management had to say about it.
Everyone was supportive. We specifically reached out to planning. They said there's pros and cons to it. Their net is neutral, is from my conversations with John Coleman. And in the police department, net positive for them as well. So overall, the other directors were in support of this.
So you're talking about this being during training. Are you asking for temporary Friday closures, or are you asking for this to be a permanent situation? Because it keeps going back to crossover training, and training to me is a temporary process to put somebody into a full-time position. So are you asking for this to be a temporary thing, or are you asking for this to be a permanent?
Permanent. It takes a long time to train people, and we know that we're going to have new people leave and people come in, and there's a lot of need for it. So permanent.
Madam Mayor, I have just one more question on this. I've done a lot of cross training myself and also with other people. And unless you're moving into that position, that cross training doesn't always give you the value added. So giving a good understanding of that role so they understand the overall of the department is very helpful. But if they're out of that role for 6 months or 9 months and then they're needed for a day, it's not as beneficial because they're trying to recap their notes. They're trying to regret what they do. If they haven't been doing it for 9 months and then they do it for a week because somebody goes on vacation, it's a lot of that muscle memory is not there from doing it. So giving them, you know, a 3 month is a long time to be cross-training into something you're not going to be doing. And that would definitely give you a well-rounded idea of how that's working at 1 week or 1 day a week, it would seem. So I wasn't expecting it to be a 6 month to a year long thing, because eventually if somebody leaves that position, you would have to fill that position for accounts payable, accounts receivable, accounts payroll. And that way you're going to hire that person in that field. So the cross-trained person would only have to fill it for so long, right?
The real concern is, you know, if I'm the payroll backup, I don't do payroll every time, so I'm going to need to continually talk with the payroll specialist to make sure I can still do her duties when she's away. And things change. But, you know, if our payroll clerk left, put in her 2 weeks' notice, we would be in a little bit of dire straits. It would take longer than 2 weeks to hire somebody. And in the interim, that would be a real, real struggle. So the need for cross-training is continuous. People need to continue, like, I'm just using payroll as an example. But, you know, somebody cross-trained in payroll needs to continue to receive that training throughout the year. And honestly, that is something about this job that keeps me up at night, is what do we do, you know, if our payroll clerk takes another job, if our AP clerk takes another job, there's going to be a big hole that we won't be able to fill immediately. And when we do fill it, that person is going to have a real uphill battle. And I know that from the kind of uphill battle our current staff had being trained in their current positions. Our utility billing clerk moved over to our deputy clerk and only had a couple of weeks of training for the deputy clerk position while she was training the new utility billing clerk. So just want to really put into perspective. I know a lot of you may have come in with the idea that you don't like that, but I just really hope you hear the challenges we're facing and the minimal cost we believe that will provide a significant benefit to the whole city.
May I make an immediate suggestion right now for just what you're talking about? And that would be Screen-O-Matic or some sort of a video screen recording system that would allow your personnel, as they're doing the processes of what they're doing, to talk it through and record it. Should they leave, somebody could just play that back and be walked through those processes. Sure, it's a different payroll week they're doing or a different staff they're doing or whatnot. Eventually, they'll really get the idea. So it might be something that you just have that stored on file as a director. I know as a manager, it's very helpful. But also, if you did have that need 2 week notice, you know, there's accounting firms that would be able to bring in just that counts payroll. Work with that person. It's costly, but it might buy you some time if that were to happen, to save you a little sleep at night. But those are, you know, possibilities of things you could do right now as you pursue this. Thank you for everything.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Councilman Burns.
Just to go off of what a number of other people said, I'll go ahead and put this out there. I'm just curious. I know you can't answer it today, but could you give us a price, an amount for hiring somebody full-time for a year, entry level, for your office? If you could give us that number at a later date, I'd appreciate it.
I can. I can give you a ballpark of like 80, at least at minimum $80,000. Yes, because you have to consider their pay, insurance, and insurance varies greatly depending on the number of people they have on the insurance, you know, and then all, you know, all the taxes and those types of things. So, it's not just their rate times, you know, the number of hours. So I would say probably around $80,000 a year. Okay. And assuming, you know, some people want to start, lower level, but you know, that position would probably go up from there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else, Kelly? Were you looking for action, or you want them to think on it, or what are your thoughts here? I don't see anything under the recommended actions. So
I just want you to think on it. Okay. Yeah, and I know, Charlie, do you want to maybe talk about, just briefly, I know you know, maybe we've exhausted this topic, but about your experience in other cities related to this?
Certainly there are cities out there that do have closure times. So that's not an unusual request. And I understand the council's desire to fully serve the public as well. That is a critical thing for staff too. We certainly want to be there to support the public. I think we felt stuck between a rock and a hard place during the time when I was overseeing finance. It's been challenging. It was challenging as well to work through the cross-training issues. The staff are very specialized that we have. They're new to their positions, and they're still, frankly, mastering those positions. But there was just no time and no capacity to go beyond that. So this is a legitimate need, and we are looking to solve it, and we appreciate the council's time this evening and thinking about it and considering it, and we look forward to further discussion with you.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Kelly. And I just want to extend a special thanks to our finance staff, because working within the building, you do see the specialized and technical skills that are required to do the jobs that they do. And I will say that your staff does try to reach out to one another to the best of their ability at the risk of taking away from their own job and the tasks and the assignments that they need to fulfill. So to the finance staff, I just want to say a heartfelt thank you, and reiterating what Finance Director Kelly says, please don't leave us. All right. Thank you. All right, so the next topic is information sharing at regular council meetings, and Charlie, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Okay. So back at the May 11th City Council meeting, during the administrator's comments, my comments, we talked a little bit about making some adjustments in the way we were going to approach council meetings with directors. There was some conversation back and forth. I talked about the weekly update emails that we begin to send out. We started sending those out at the end of May. And made this transition. We've certainly heard some feedback from council since that time, and council has requested this conversation this evening. So we are here to talk with you about what's working, what's not working. It's certainly the mayor's intent to continue what we're trying in terms of these changes with the directors and the reports for the remainder of the year. So we wanted to be upfront about that, but we certainly want to see if we can make this system work as well as possible. So here to chat with you.
Councilwoman Kesty.
Okay. As someone who felt really strongly about it, the city senior leadership management team receives executive leave of 80 hours per year to be at meetings such as our council meetings and other activity work-related outside of their normal working hours. I feel that the current behind-the-scenes weekly emails and conversations need to be happening at our meetings with the minutes correctly reflecting what we say, and that the directors need to be at the meetings they are being compensated for to answer any questions we have or questions we are asking on behalf of our constituents. That's how I feel about it.
Anyone else? Councilwoman Gotham?
Thank you. I can see both sides to this, too. I've seen some directors sit through a three-hour meeting and not have anything to say. But at the same time, I thought it was really helpful to hear, you know, each report and have the opportunity to bring a concern directly to them, you know, face to face, have that discussion, have an opportunity for all of us to talk about it. Because I remember multiple occasions where someone would ask a question and it was something I wasn't even thinking about, but it got answered on the spot. And I know sometimes, you know, people have to go back and get the answer, or we can always email it ahead of time. And I'll be honest, like, seeing the email chains, for me is not as efficient as having a, you know, one time face to face with everyone. That's my input on it. I don't think that everyone has to stay for the whole meeting. I think, you know, if they were here for the director of reports, even if it's on, you know, Zoom, if they want to Zoom in from home for 20, 30 minutes to just be there present, that would be acceptable for me as well.
Councilman Diamond?
I was just going to echo what they had said as well. I also actually like to have them here, and I have no issue with it being, we are hybrid, so they can be in the comfort of their home or wherever they might need to be as well. We all have circumstances that may not be able to attend every single one. I understand that. We have families and outside lives, but at the same point, you know, Councilwoman Kesty made a very good point, and Councilman McGoffin made very good points as well, and I would echo both of them.
Madam Mayor, I'll just add one thing. I think if the council does wish for this to happen, they should move way up on the agenda so they don't have to stick around until 8 or 8:30 or 9 or whatever. But I think their presence is, because people call us. We're their city council people, and if they have beefs, or we can ask what a status with something is. So, you know, if we can move them up the docket and get them out at a decent time, that would be wonderful, in my opinion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
I'd agree that if we're going to ask them to come in for each meeting, having them right at the beginning would be a great idea so that they can get back to their lives and not have to stick around for it. And zooming in would be completely acceptable to me. Just being able to get an answer to something the constituent has a concern about publicly so that they can go back and see the answer if they wanted to, that would be great with me.
And they are at the top. They're usually right after yes. Consent. So
yeah, I guess more or less letting them know that they're more than welcome to leave and not stick around. We don't expect that of them.
All right. If that's everything on that topic, we are going to move into...
I have one more thing I'd like to say.
Yep.
I'd really like you guys to consider our thoughts, and if we don't have to wait a year to see this happen, if the majority of us like this.
My request was that we do it till the end of the year. This was something that we actually made the announcement on May. It was one of the first council meetings in May. And there didn't seem to be, it was announced both by Chief Tucker and by Charlie. And nobody made any statement at that point.
I guess under that, how it was presented, it was more or less kind of not fully told what it was going to be to us, and just that you were going to be trying something new, and we saw what it is and we don't like it.
So okay, moving on. So we are going to step in now to public hearing, and the purpose of this hearing is for City Council to hear the biennium budget, the preliminary biennium budget, and the budget reviews. The way this order is going to go is that I'm going to call this to order, which I am right now at 7:12, and I will have staff presentation, which will be our finance director, Kelly Kokum, and then any testimony from the public if they want to do that, and then we will open it up for council to have any questions or any responses. So with that, director.
Thank you very much. You get to hear me talk a lot tonight. Would you mind bringing up the document? So you have the document at your seat.
First, so we're talking about the next biennial budget, 2023-2024, and this is just the first. We're really just on the first round of it. So you'll go to the next page. And before we get into it, I just have a couple things for you to remember. This is a high-level review of the 2023-2024 biennium, and here we're focusing on the general fund. This information is preliminary. We're still in the first round. And the dollar amounts will change. A couple of the key things we're still working through, among others, is the indirect cost allocation and the transfers to the equipment replacement fund. Some other numbers will probably change too. We'll refine them. So just want you to keep those in mind as we go through this. So the general fund, there's a lot of different things in the general fund. This is just a list of them. Legislative, so the council, judicial, the court, the executive, so the mayor and the city administrator, finance, and then the rest of them are pretty self-explanatory. Some of the bigger ones are police and fire and EMS. The general fund also generally supports in some way, you know, either small or larger, the remainder of the funds as well. That's something we still are working on too, is potential transfers to other funds. On the next slide is our projections for revenues. We have 2018 through 2021 actual, so just some historical information to give context, as well as our current 2022 budget and the estimates going forward. And you can see we also have percentages. I know it's really small on the screen. Hopefully it's a little bit bigger on your page. You can see the majority of our revenue stream and how we support our government is through taxes. You can see 55% is from taxes. 25 is interlocal or intergovernmental, and 15 is from charges for goods and services. On the next slide, it's basically just revenues presented in a different format, depending on how you best absorb information. You can see in the dark blue, those are our taxes. One thing I just wanted to note in general fund, and something you'll see in 2021 and 2022, the ARPA money the city received, we received two big, they call it tranches of money for $1.68 million, two of them. They were initially put into the general fund. We've decided to move those out of the general fund and start their own fund, just so we are very transparent about how we're spending that money. So some of these numbers, like especially in 2021, the revenue went in there. You'll see a little spike in 2021. It's not a great representation because although we got that money, we haven't spent that money in that year yet. We're just holding the majority of it. So those are the revenues for 20, for the next biennium and some past history. The next slide just gives a further breakdown on taxes, just to give you an idea of where our tax dollars come from. And again, a little bit of history and what we're projecting. On average, 34% of our tax revenue comes from sales tax, which we don't have a lot of immediate and direct control over. After that is property tax, about 23%, which the council does have control over that portion of it. Next slide is just, again, a visualization of that same information. The next one after that, I should have labeled this. This is how property tax on the left is divided among the funds. So I think it's 51% generally goes to the general fund, and then parks and facilities, the cemetery gets a little portion, streets, and the library. That's generally how we have split out property tax. It can be adjusted based on need, but that's our current process. And then you can see sales tax, the vast majority of it goes into the general fund. There are a lot of other, this is general sales tax. There's a lot of other portions of sales tax and money we get from the state that go to fund other special purposes that aren't encompassed here. This is just the general sales tax. Just lift your head up or like wave if you have questions. I have a spot for questions, but I know a lot of this is data. So on the next slide, again, very similar to the revenues, just giving you a breakdown of what we expect to spend in expenditures by the different departments. And then next slide is just a visualization of that same data. You can see in the kind of reddish maroon that's the police department spending a significant amount of the general fund expenditures, and then in the kind of the second biggest blue bar is fire and EMS. Pretty historically, a lot of our money has gone there. The next slide is just our revenues and expenditures in total. You can see for 2022, we are in the red a bit. Also for 2023, about $35,000 anticipated. Again, we're still working with those numbers, but 2024 anticipate being in the black. Again, still figuring out those numbers. I know we're all trying to figure out inflation and wages for all of our staff. So again, those numbers were changed, but wanted to give you at least a snapshot of that. And then again, next one is just a graph of that same information. So that's a lot of information. And you can, process it at your own pace. If you ever have questions, you can ask. But before I get into our recommendations specifically for revenues, does anyone have any questions about that information?
I have a question. Oh, go
ahead, Councilman Lavaca.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, Kelly. Thanks for the information as well. So in 2024, we're looking at a property tax that has a pretty substantial jump in there. Is there a reason why? And it looks like over the five-year span from 2019 to 2024, it's almost quadrupled. Is there a reason why we're estimating that? Or
yes. And that we'll be going over that shortly. So if you could just wait, and I will go over that in our recommendations. It'll cover it quite thoroughly, I believe.
Madam Mayor, I have a question.
Yes, Councilman Kesty.
So this is just, for the legal, there's like quite a bump up. And I'm just curious as a whole, is there like a minimum of an hour so that me as a council member will not be adding to this? Like if I have a question and I email her, is there a minimum of like $200 for this hour to ask a question? Or what does that look like for the jump up like that? Because I don't want to be creating more if I had a question for her. What do you know what her hourly or what that looks like?
We can break it down in more detail, but six-minute increments is what I've been told. That's how she bills, six-minute increments. The hourly rate is, I want to say it's 200. I'm trying to recall the contract right now. No, for the hourly rate. Okay. So you'd have to convert the 6 minutes backwards.
Okay.
And if you ever have any questions about that dollar amount, just recommend you come to Charlie or I first. Charlie does oversee that budget, but of course, you know, both of us could answer questions about that to the best of our ability.
Kelly, I had one more question. Yeah. You went over to, or I believe it was you and one of your staff went over to Vegas for the training with our software program, right? You know, one of the things that I was hoping that you could look into was the visual data and being able to have, you know, drill down charts where we could see something like this and we could touch on the graph and then drill down into what is the charges for goods and services and see another chart when we drill into that. And then we could touch any one of those and see another chart as we drill down to find out where that money's going. And then get that posted up on the website so that way all the people of Cedar Valley can see where all that money goes for each one of those and how it comes in. Is that something that you were able to do over there, or are you exploring that with the software we have?
Two of our staff are going next week. Our utility billing clerk and our payroll clerk, they're going specifically to go to the payroll training and the utility billing. So I'm not sure that our current system, Springbrook, has that, but there are other ways to present that might not be, you know, quite that simple, but we can definitely take that into consideration.
Okay. Yeah, no, that would be great. I know Power BI has a secure system that allows you to create drill down charts. It's kind of like Access, basically a standard query that you could just dump your information into. And it looks like you have the information. I talked to Debbie. She showed me that there's a bunch of information you basically import into it. And then we can see things like this, but have it more interactive so we can kind of drill down.
Yeah. What was the name of that?
Power BI, it's put out by Microsoft, and that's a pretty general one. It's very great. It's cheap, and it definitely has the features of a drill down capability to where it's simple. You just put in your data, and then it does it for you. You create your own charts.
Thank you.
I'll stop by the office sometime and just kind of give you a run if you want. All right. Thank you.
Any other questions before moving on? Okay. Councilman Lavaca beat me to the punch. So how do we pay for that? And I apologize to the members of the safety committee. I am going to go over some of the things we talked about at the public safety committee, specifically how to fund some of our public safety need. This will cover the general government as well as our public safety need. So, like I said, property tax is a big portion of our taxes and our total funding for the city, and the council does have some control over that portion of it. And just wanted to give a hopefully brief summary of how property taxes worked. I know even after I gave this presentation, one of the staff members at it repeated it back to me incorrect. So I know it's not as straightforward as it looks. So, let's see. So generally, we think that property tax is calculated by, you know, the county going out and assessing the value of properties, that the city sets the levy rate, and then that's how much money in revenue that we collect. And a lot of that is partially because of how the county presents it to make it easy to read. So this is just a little snippet from the county. Anyone can go on the county website and pull up current and previous property tax levies. And you can see, if you're looking through these notes later, there's a big red X at the bottom. This is not how property tax is calculated. Sorry, Woody, next slide. This leads us to believe that, like, if we increase property tax by 1%, it's a 1% increase in the, or one, unit increase in the levy rate. So the levy rate going up by $1 significantly increases property tax collected. But again, this is not how property tax is collected. So on the next slide, how it's actually calculated, it's first the city assesses its need from property tax, and then we levy that dollar amount with some limitations. And then the county determines the assessed value of property. If you don't know, every property is, the value is reassessed every 6 years. And then using those numbers, the levy rate is determined. With no action, the budgeted levy, so the money the city collects, will stay the same. If we take no action, we'll receive the same amount of money we received last year, with the exception of new construction. But generally, for simplicity, it'll stay the same. So this is how property tax works. So on the next slide, we do have the ability, the city can increase total taxes or the budgeted levy, so the total amount we bring in, by 1%. And the council can do that with no further action necessary. So in this example, I know it's kind of small up there. Hopefully you can read it here. We're using 2021 to 2022 as an example. You could increase the from 2021 amounts by 1% to get to the new dollar amount. And we also have example of what the levy rate would be there, which is 2.1007%. If you go to the next slide, in this example where we increased, we took the 1% that you can take every year. The levy rate actually ended up going down from 2021 to 2022. Even though we collected more money, the levy rate on an individual person's house went down, because property values are going up by more than 1%, quite a bit more than 1%. So just want to point that out, that even if we increase the money coming in, it's not necessarily an increase to the levy rate. So our recommendations based on that information. I guess I should stop here and ask if anybody has any questions. Again, I'm talking a long time.
Are there any questions?
I just have one point of clarification. I really appreciate that explanation, because the last couple times that the property tax has come up and I've heard from constituents, that was like the number one reason, like, my assessed value has gone up so much, I don't want another 1% because it's going to tax me so much more. So that really clarifies it for me, too, that I have a chart that I can look at and show them now.
Just a couple slides, we have a couple of examples of a home and the what an increase would do for an individual home.
All right. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay, so getting into our recommendations for the next biennium. So for 2023, we recommend approving the banked capacity. So that previous example I showed was a 1% increase from 2021 to 2022. Council did not approve that 1% increase last time. So the majority of that is just sitting as banked capacity. So we can assess that dollar amount and the annual 1%. So we recommend doing that for 2021. And again, there's some numbers up there as well. On the next slide, we wanted to show the impact to a homeowner. It's kind of hard to get like what the average home is in Jewelry, but I use my neighbor's house. So it's $361,700 assessed value currently. And again, homes get assessed every 6 years, so this may change. But in 2022, specifically for the city, they paid $776 in property taxes to the city. If we took our bank capacity and increased the 1%, which is what we're recommending, we estimate that the increase in property tax for this property would be $14 annually. So $1.17 a month. And of course, this will fluctuate based on the value of a home. Lower valued homes would pay less. Higher valued homes would pay more. Next slide. Any questions about our 2023 recommendations?
I just have one comment. You know, I know people that are just barely making it, and $10, $15, or $20, that just cuts a little deeper. And there's no way I can set up here and vote for more property taxes. I think people are fat enough. There's other ways to gather a little money, and I've never heard the word cut. And if you have to, cut something, but don't punish the public. Some people can afford it. I mean, people that make $900,000 a year, that's no big problem, but people out here living on Social Security, the older generation that don't have this 401k or didn't have, and they don't have a company retirement, they're living on Social Security. And I feel for those people. And I'm not going to sit up here and vote for more property taxes. That's my opinion. And we've done it for the past few years. It keeps going up 1%, 1%, 1%. And that adds up over the years. So, I'm sorry. I just can't see raising property taxes on those people. Like I say, some people can afford it, but a lot of people can't afford it. So that's just my opinion. Thank you,
Councilman Lavaca.
Oh, thank you very much, Mayor Julia. Kelly, I was wondering on the tax that goes in there. My house, when I bought it in 2016, it's over doubled, and I've gotten a lot of different tax evaluations and increases. I'm sure a lot of people feel that same way. Just in the one that you showed up at $361,000, I'm not sure when they bought it, but of course they didn't buy it with the intent to sell, so the property going up, value going up, doesn't really make much sense except for the property tax going up. So now they're paying what, like $320 a month or something. So, my question is, with all of this property value that's rising up, and it seems to be somewhat unnatural in a big way, are we taking precautions, to weigh against that? Should it come down in a bubble? And also, all of this looks like it's for $50,000 a year. Is that correct as well? So the increase of 1% and another 1%, or the bank, would be about 28, so about $56,000. Is that what that equates to?
Yes, and it's compounding. So the 1%, so the city, it's 1% on the prior year's amount. So we can bank that capacity, but it's compounding over time, the 1%. So 1% is well below the last several years of inflation. So just want to point that out as well. We do have some recommendations for 2024. Would you like to hear those and then pause again for questions? I don't know if that's okay for me to recommend. Yeah.
Yeah. Would the council like to hear that? Sure. Okay, yes.
So on the next slide, the fire department has a pretty significant and consistent need for more firefighter medics so they can provide sufficient shift coverage and increase our public safety. Even at last Tuesday's meeting, Chief Wagner kind of gave an exhausting list of their activities over the weekend, and their work and their staff really hard. Some of them are here with us. You've seen this. Chief Wagner has reported it pretty consistently in his staff reports and weekly emails. How many shifts are short covered each week? I don't know if there's ever a week where all the shifts are covered. So they need some more staff there. They estimate 4 additional firefighter medics to cover their need. So what does that mean? That's about $700,000 annually for 4 medics.
Or $175,000 per?
Yes. Yep. That covers their wages, benefits, medical, pensions. That's in total. So how can we fund this? On the next slide, we can fund this through property tax with a levy lid lift. We did this a couple years ago for the police department. So like we said, the levy can, or the city can increase the levy by more than 1%, but it has to go out to the voters, which I know at our safety committee meeting, the members there seemed in favor of sending it out to the voters to see is public safety a priority there. So we reached out to the county just to get an idea. The maximum levy rate we could assess is $3.6 for every $1,000 of home value. We are not recommending going up that high. But just want to put it in perspective from the county information. On the next page is our recommendation is to go out to the voters for a levy lid lift for starting in 2024. And we gave an example of what we anticipate that dollar amount to be and then what the levy rate would be. We're not making any, the council's not making any decisions tonight, but if you went ahead with this, we would need council approval by middle of the year next year, and need to get that information to Skagit County to put it on the ballot at the end of 2023, and they would then assess that in 2024. But we really need to get the council's priority on this item so we can appropriately budget for these amounts. So on the next slide, again, just wanted to show the impact to a homeowner, and using that same property and comparing 2022, again, they're currently paying the city $776 a year. The estimate would be, I think that number in here is incorrect. The estimate would be an additional $197 annually, so about $200 more a year, or $16 a month above what's being paid in 2022. that we wouldn't get that funding until January, fiscal year 24. So on the next slide, how to bridge that gap. So if we hired two medics, in 2023 to at least relieve a portion of the gap, that fire EMS is feeling, it would cost about $314,000 in 2023. We don't currently have a revenue stream to support that. However, the City Council Strategic Fund does have funds in there. Right now, the only use for the council strategic funds is to pay an additional loan payment on the loan the city took out to pay this building. So we pay an additional payment every September, so in the next couple of weeks, to pay this building down, so we pay less interest on that outstanding debt. So that is one strategy to bridge the gap. We hope that fire and EMS doesn't have to wait out, you know, over a year to hire those new staff and maintain the public safety.
It's actually, if you look at it from today's date, it's actually about 2 years, is it not?
We'd likely start funding bring on the position in January of 2024, even though the property tax wouldn't start rolling in until mid-year, based on when people pay their property tax.
Right. So that'd be close to 2 years from now.
Yeah.
That funding would come in.
Yeah, we would likely get the position earlier, but the money, we would be a little bit in the negative net revenue over expenditures in for quite a while.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Councilman Kesty.
So you would only be using the strategic reserve fund once?
Correct. We would have to think of alternatives. So, you know, if we went with the staff's our recommendation, the levy lid lift would have to go out to the public. We would have to have kind of a backup plan or a strategy if the lid lift didn't pass. But if everything went based on our expectations, we'd only use the City Council Strategic Reserve 1 year, so for 2023, and then rely on our increase in property tax going forward in 2024.
Thank you. Any more questions? Councilman Owen, do you have a question?
No, I was just going to ask you this 1% levy for the fire department, would that be for next year? Would that be voted on in November or the following year?
The 1% the city can take every year does not require voter approval. The council has the authority to do that. I believe the vast majority of cities typically take that 1%, just to give you some perspective of our neighbors.
Well, the way things are now, and everything going up and up and up, it'd be pretty hard to pass a levy, I think, at this present time.
I'll just weigh in. We would anticipate asking the council, it's a separate action, to consider putting the levy on the ballot. It would go on the ballot for November of next year, and we would ask you that probably this fall. That's our intention.
Well, actually, July. We got to get it to the county by August. Yeah, and if from Frank or Chief Wagner and the members of the Public Safety Committee came up with some really great ideas about, you know, if the council approves this idea at later meetings, to really heavily go out into the community and discuss with our residents the real need and the benefit to them as well. you know, I think it is a little bit scary to think, you know, if you need an ambulance, sometimes our city doesn't have the capacity and other jurisdictions have to meet that need. And Chief Wagner can, you know, go over that in more detail if requested. But, you know, I think we have at least a good shot to sell the voters on our need.
Yes, Councilman McGoffin.
Thank you. I would support sending this to the voters. I think having seen the reports from Frank, it's concerning how many, you know, shifts we're not able to cover. And letting the public, you know, see that and make the decision on their vote. I did have one question on the bridge in the gap slide. If the voters do turn down increasing, we would just be out that 314 and have to let those two people go, right?
So you'd be out if you use the city council reserve, you'd be paying those two people in 2013 regardless. If it wasn't approved, we would have to think of alternatives. And one of those being, which is not, you know, we think property tax is a better revenue stream for that, is potentially increasing the utility tax. That's a potential. But there's also the potential of having to let two people go. And that's just a strategic decision the city would have to make.
And I'll just add there's also the potential to reprioritize, to reduce somewhere else, to decide what priorities are most important from the council's perspective and potentially to keep those two positions funded but make a cut somewhere else.
Kelly, if I may, Madam Mayor?
Yes, go ahead, Councilman Lavaca.
Kelly, is there a way to get a full cost of what the fire department right now receives in their revenue and what that looks like with all the people? I was actually at that safety, I'm on the safety committee, mm-hmm. and I think I agree with Councilman McLaughlin that it should go before the voters to decide on that one. It is a large increase, and if it goes before the voters, they should see how much they each pay for the services they now have, as well as it's almost like car insurance or homeowners insurance. You never need it until you need it, and then, you know, you're glad you had it when you do, but you want to know how much it is and see what that cost is. So do you have the opportunity to provide that?
Yes. And I don't have the details, but in the packet, you'll see that in the expenditure section is fire and EMS. So the last, known number, I mean, we have some year to date numbers for 2022, but, for 2021, total fire department expenditures were about $3.6 million.
Okay. If there are no more questions, I am going to allow public comment or for public testimony for anybody who wishes to speak. I'll begin with anybody online. If there's someone online who would like to give testimony speaking to the preliminary biennium budget for 2023-2024, okay, seeing nobody online doing that. Here within the council chamber, is there anybody who would like to speak to that? Yes. Please give a name and
address. My name's Philip Murray. I live at 101 West Woodworth. I keep wondering why we need more EMTs and ambulances and even police, and it's because more people move here. You built brand new houses. People bought them for $450,000, $500,000. And you put the whole bill on everybody who's lived here forever instead of on the new people coming in. And they're getting the benefit of that. And it just doesn't seem fair. And people cannot afford that kind of a raise in taxes. It's just ridiculous. You need to tighten your belts. Thank you.
Is there anybody else?
Tony Splane, 714 Sap Road, City of Woodley. I can't agree much on this property tax increase. I live solely on a Social Security check, $1,800 a month. Any money you want to live on, $1,800 a month and keep your house. Now, you say just a little 1% wage increase in property taxes. I have to cut somewhere to pay that. I'm at one meal a day now. What else am I going to cut? Leave my house at 50 degrees all winter long? Will that do it? The older folks, senior citizens, if you will, cannot stand constant property tax increases when all they have is a Social Security check. And why can't you understand that? Thank you.
Is there anyone else? All right, so one more chance for questions or responses from the council to Kelly regarding. Yes, Councilman, go ahead.
I'd like to acknowledge you. Thank you for making the public comment. And two questions. The first is, is there a program within the county to help people that cannot afford the property taxes?
Yes, you can apply with the county for a reduced property tax. There are some stipulations, and we're happy to provide those or point you to the county.
Okay, thank you. And the second question I had was, I believe last year we didn't pass the 1% increase. Is that correct?
That's correct.
We didn't increase. It was my understanding that we were going to tighten the belt and cut services because we weren't able to increase. And from my understanding, we're actually looking at bringing that forward into this year and increasing it twice, right? Because we're using the banked and the 1%.
Correct.
I guess I maybe misunderstood what that vote meant last year, because I thought voting it no was that, okay, now we're going to cut back on the budget. We're not going to look for that money again. And I know the bank exists. I just thought that I was hoping to see where were we cutting those services so that for the next year I could know, you know, if I don't pass it or if I do pass it, these are the services that we're going to cut. You know, we're looking at, you know, cutting service on Friday afternoons to the public. And if we increase taxes and cut services, you know, I think we need to be mindful of that. And so I would like to see, you know, in the last year, where did we cut the money that we didn't increase the taxes for?
We can get back to you on that. In the budget amendment we did back in the spring, there were some reductions included in that, and that was based on the conversation we had. They weren't all direct service delivery lines. We went and looked at some creative spots within the budget to try to make reductions, but we've also had unexpected expenses that we've also had to deal with. So if you look at the total numbers, you won't necessarily see those, but we can go back and call some of those out for you at a future presentation.
I have a quick question. I know I've spoken with Chief Wagner a little bit in the past regarding taxes and how future firefighters, EMTs, first responders would or could be funded with the increase in the population, the apartment complexes and stuff like that going on, and my concern being the residents that had lived here for all these years and they're going up, but it's at a... The development in the population comes at a cost, right? And so I know that there are different types of ways to assess it. Has that been looked into at all in regards to apartment complexes or users or types of units that are charged more based on what they are? Like this, I know the city of Burien, I believe, does it, and there are some other cities that do that so that it doesn't hit some of these people that have been here for all these years.
To my understanding, pay property tax solely based on the assessed value of your property. The city does not have control over the assessed value of property.
Correct. It wasn't a property tax issue necessarily. It was a fire tax.
A fire tax.
It's separate. It was a way to kind of offset that.
Are you talking about a regional fire authority formation?
I'm not sure if that's exactly the case. I don't recall that being the terms that were used, but I know that it was a discussion that was had like a year ago about, you know, in my what ifs.
Okay. Yeah, we can take a look at Burien a little bit and see if we can figure out what they're doing down there. Mm-hmm. There are regional fire authorities that are coming up around the state. That's certainly a new model for service delivery. And there are revenues that those fire authorities can tap into that the city doesn't have access to.
I'm not meaning to change the services or anything that we're providing or the people here that we're providing, not by any means. It was strictly a tax base issue in how that was funded and not a service issue, not taking away from anybody that is employed here, the volunteer program, nothing. It was, you know, based on population and the type of growth and the type of services that were being provided, being that there, you know, certain types of certain areas or you know, apartments where they're called more often, those sorts of things because of the type of housing unit it may be.
Okay. We'll look into that.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Councilman McGoffin.
Sorry. I know I'm not trying to keep everybody. Councilman Diamond made a good point that I wanted to follow up on. On slide 7, there's a new construction of 74,000. We've had a lot of growth, and I know we've had some comments about how much growth that they should be paying that. It seems really small for the number of, like, apartment complexes, housing developments. We're only, is that 74 from all that new growth?
For that year, yes.
Okay.
So it's assessed property value that wasn't currently there that is now. And although, you know, like I said, generally the dollar amount that the city brings in from property tax every year stays the same, except for those that new property. So it does go up because there is new value added, but it's not a consistent or sustainable source or potential source as new property development goes up and down, right? So we see that increase when there's a boom in homes, new home builds, but we won't see that increase in years when there are no new homes.
Okay. So I guess my question would be, for the amount of growth that we've experienced, we're looking at hiring 4 new firefighters, right, EMTs. That just doesn't seem like the sustainable route. You know, you got 74 of all this new growth, all these new people. If we didn't have any of that growth, would we still be short those 4 firefighters?
There's more to the story. So there's a lot more to the fire story that we were able to share with the Public Safety Committee. Tonight, we just really wanted to hit on the financials. And when we come back to talk about putting it on the ballot, we can get into that a lot more. But a big part of the story is that we've lost about half of our volunteer firefighters as well over the last couple of years. And so if we had those shifts filled with volunteers still, it would be a different story. We've done a lot of work to try to fill those positions, and for a variety of reasons, we've seen volunteerism drop off. So we have not been able to necessarily fill those positions. Another piece of the puzzle is our part-time firefighters, many of them have turned over because there have been a lot of new opportunities available for full-time firefighter positions in the region. And so they've gone on to those positions and vacated those spots, which have also been hard to fill. So it's a staffing shortage issue. It is a growth and calls issue, but it's not solely driven by growth and calls, not even close. It's more of a staffing shortage.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? If not, it is 8:02 and I'm going to close this public hearing.
Just add one really quick on the fire one. Right now, I did off the expenditures, and with the fire and the law enforcement, it looks like we're spending about $42 a month per person if there's 13,000 people here in Cedar Woolley. So that's $44 per month. I'm wondering, is there a way for them to also cut back costs as they're also asking for the general public to increase their revenue? You know what I mean? So if it's $44 a person and you got four people in your home with two kids and two adults, I mean, you could see how that would add up. And a lot of people, I don't know if that's a high amount or if there's a way to kind of tighten that up and assist people to get to urgent care versus having an ambulance come out or whatnot. Or that could be a talk for the during the levy thing.
That's likely a question for Chief Wagner. But the public safety meeting and other, weekly comments with the chief, they don't have a lot of, expendable expenditures. You know, fire trucks, ambulances are all required equipment and then the vast majority of the expenditures there is staff. And again, need to fill those shifts. But again, Chief Wagner will have a better grasp of fire and EMS need.
All right, thank you. Okay, it is 8:04, and I just want to remind everybody that next Wednesday we have another council meeting, the 14th of the month at 6 p.m. I look forward to seeing you all here. Lively discussion. We're all adjourned.